Hello and welcome back to the Advisor Pact monthly session. This is the time we get together each month and, well, respond to your questions. If you're live and you want to raise your hand and get some one-on-one coaching based on questions that you've accumulated trying to implement this system, feel free. Look on your GoToWebinar panel and raise your hand. When I get to a breaking point, I will unmute you. This is the program for advisors who have made a pledge to each and every one of their ideal clients. The premise of this program is to provide a level of service and a client experience that is so far above and beyond anything that clients can attain anywhere else that you're in essence aligning your services with what clients say they want and what we know that they need. These four things, the acronym that comprises the name of our program, Advisor Pact, these are the four things. We call these the four client expectations that clients claim they can't find anywhere at any price. And this program is designed to show you how to build a business that is perfectly aligned with what clients both need and want, and focused around a business model that allows clients to be willing to compensate you at levels far beyond what they're paying other advisors, because you are protecting them, paying attention, well coordinating their assets, their financial affairs, and in full and fair transparency. And you will make a pledge, an advisor pact pledge, to every ideal client to deliver on all four of these promises. You know, clients are actually very simple. They're looking for two things: competency and trust. If they are convinced that you're highly skilled, highly competent, and that you're worthy of trust, and in the client's mind, we have plenty of data on this, if you're capable of delivering on these four things and the client's aware of that, then you're not just different from other financial advisors in your area. You've carved out a niche that is inaccessible to other advisors. The industry is set up to avoid these four things, and by delivering on these four promises, making a pledge to every client that you'll do these four things, well, you have carved out a spot for yourself that puts you in a category of one. By delivering on these four things, you'll be the only game in town. It's not just that an advisor has it's not just that an ideal client has a choice of one or two or maybe three advisors in the area that they could choose from to deliver on these things. No, if you do this right, you'll be the only game in town. There will be no other advisor that that can deliver on what it is that you do. And by focusing on the four things that clients want most, you'll be head and shoulders above any of your competition. I don't care how big they are. I don't care how well established or well entrenched or experienced they are. It doesn't even matter how skilled they are. By delivering on these four things, you'll be the only game in town. Now, I'm going to focus on a conversation that I had with an advisor. What struck me about this conversation in the last 30 days is, well, let me back up. What we do on this session is, of all the questions that we receive each month from advisors implementing the Advisor Pact program, I select from among those questions one or two questions that I think are really overriding issues, things that represent big issues that if you can in essence get a firm grasp and absorb concepts at the level that we're dealing with these questions, I think you will make huge advancements more quickly. You'll accelerate your results by focusing on these issues. So this is such a question. I got this question, and in actuality, I contacted this advisor because the issue was so big that I had to share with this advisor. These two questions are among the two most common questions, or maybe I should say issues or obstacles that advisors face. And what they are is actually conceptual issues that oftentimes there are, I'm going to say, misconceptions. So we're going to deal with it today because I want you to really, your goal today is for you to really grasp these two issues in a way that is going to change the way that you approach your business. Okay, so this advisor submitted the question this way. I've heard you describe financial advisors using the Advisor Pact method, having clients paying $50,000 plus per year, annual recurring compensation to the advisor. Okay, I'm going to talk about compensation in just a minute. And frankly, I went back on past sessions and I'm not 100% sure what this advisor was referring to. I'm not sure which session or what course this came up. There is truth to this, but I'm gonna nail down for you in a minute what the average advisor charges using our method. But anyway, the real question is this: can you help me get my mind around this, meaning that level of compensation? Since there are two issues which are haunting me, that caught my eye because haunting me. That's a pretty vivid picture. Okay, so first of all, issue haunting this advisor: there are not people in my area who want that level of service. Okay, this we hear all the time, and I'm going to deal with it today. Right here, right now, we're going to deal with this issue. And secondly, there are no people I can hire capable of delivering at that level of service in my area. So the two issues are, first of all, there aren't clients who are at this level. And secondly, when it comes to building a team, there are not people in my area that are capable of delivering service at that high level for clients paying that much. Okay, so I'm going to say on number two, we're getting way ahead of ourselves, because, and I'll show you why exactly in a minute, because there's so many things that you need to lay down and get into place before you even think about building a team. There's we call them mindset issues, issues that involve you delivering a different kind of experience to the client, and before your team even gets involved. But before I deal with these two issues, let's talk about this comment that you make about that I've heard you describe that there are financial advisors using the Advisor Pact method, charging their clients $50,000 per client per year. So let me just talk about advisor compensation for just a moment. I don't have data on the Advisor Pact monthly program, so that's why I was going back trying to see where you got this information. Because we have no data, because the Advisor Pact monthly program is a self-paced program, and it's not set up with, this program is not set up with input fields for you to share specific details of your business and exactly what you're doing. So I don't have any data on the Advisor Pact monthly program. However, I have promised you from time to time, when it's appropriate, I would give you a peek into our flagship, you know, higher end program where advisors are paying, you know, substantial amounts of money to use our software and receive our coaching to implement this same system. It's just, in essence, you get to a point down the road where, you know, you're looking for a system to implement what we're talking about here. And for those advisors who are in, we call that program the Trusted Advisor Toolkit. So for advisors in that program, we do have data. We know what they're charging their clients. And on the low end, the advisor in the Trusted Advisor Toolkit who's charging the least amount to their clients, it's $20,000 per year. So on the low end, we have advisors charging clients $20,000 per client per year. This is US dollars. On the high end, we have an advisor, a single advisor, charging clients $100,000 US dollars per client per year for these same services. For the deliverables, we call it truly comprehensive financial services over on the Trusted Advisor Toolkit. So whether the advisor is charging their client $20,000 per client per year or $100,000 per client per year, it's the same set of services, same deliverables, checkpoints, same team structure. Everything's the same. It's just the level of service that's being provided. Think about when you fly across the country. It's the same plane. Everybody in the plane gets to the destination safely, you know. But some people are back in coach, and some people are up in first class eating the filet mignon and drinking champagne, and with the beds that recline all the way flat into a bed for comfort. So, you know, it's just the level of service. So we all know the difference when you're talking about averages, the difference between median and mean. So if I were to talk about the mean, I would say that more advisors on the toolkit are charging towards the higher end. And so if I use the mean, the average would be higher. But I chose to show you the median. If I choose just the halfway point, what are advisors charging as far as the median? What's the average advisor charging on the toolkit? It's just at 25. It's just slightly over $25,000 per client per year. So, there aren't people in your area. I don't know, $50,000, that's just a number. I'm just saying the average is between $20,000 and $100,000, with the average being $25,000. It's really every advisor is running their own race. My good friend Bill Bachrach says we're all running our own race. And so it's up to you in the race that you're running and the ideal business that you're trying to build. You know, the question really ultimately comes down to, for the number of clients you're wanting to acquire, maximum clients that you're willing to serve personally, how much money do you need coming in to, you know, pay your bills, pay your taxes, fund your future goals and live a fabulous lifestyle currently? So, what, you know, how much money do you need coming in for all of that? Divide that by the number of clients that you're, you know, the maximum number of clients that you want to serve, and that's that pretty much drives the per client per year. But let me deal with another aspect of this issue. You weren't really challenging the $50,000. You were just basically throwing out $50,000 per client per year and saying, they're just not people in my area who want that level of service. Well, okay, let's just pick an arbitrary compensation amount. Let's say you're making $50,000 compensation per client per year. So my question to you is, how many people live in your area? How many potential clients are there within a reasonable driving distance from your office? Are there hundreds of people, thousands of people, tens of thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people, millions of people? If you're in New York City or Toronto, I would say there may be a million people within a reasonable driving, 15, 20 minutes driving from your distance from your office. When I built my business in San Antonio, Texas, there were over a million people in the community. But when I answered that question and did the research, and I recommend that you do the demographics to figure this out, but from my office, reasonable driving distance, there were in excess of 200,000 potential clients in a reasonable driving distance from my office. Here, where I live today in La Jolla, California, there are more than 320,000 potential clients living within a reasonable driving distance of my office. That's 15 or 20 minutes drive. So we're not talking about the hundreds, if not thousands, if not tens of thousands, if not millions of people in your community. we're talking about 50 to 100 people. In my business, when I built out this whole system that you're in the process of building out, I had 100 clients. I capped my personal ideal client community at 100. Once I reached 100 clients, I stopped accepting clients. Not that you have to do that. We don't get involved in that. You can continue accepting clients, hire other advisors, whatever you decide to do is fine. We have a model for either way you want to go. But I'm just telling you my situation. For me, I had 100 clients and then I capped it. In the current era where we've got advice, and I charged closer to the median. I charged closer to the $25,000, $30,000 per client per year. I started out at the lower end and then I worked my way up by the time I got to 100 clients. But I can tell you in the modern era where more advisors that are using our system, implementing our methodology, I can tell you that the vast majority of advisors currently on our system have capped their ideal client community, meaning the number of clients they themselves are personally going to serve, at 50 or less. So I think the question is, are there 50 people who are capable of paying whatever the number is? Are there 50 people in your community of, you know, thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people in a reasonable driving distance from your office? Are there 50 people capable of paying $50,000 a year if they only found an advisor who was willing and able, that is competent and worthy of trust enough to deliver on what they're actually looking for, what they want in a relationship with a financial advisor, and are willing to pay? So I think when you think of it that way, there are very few communities where there aren't 50 people, and that's all you're looking for is 50 potential ideal clients. So when you say there are not people in my area who want that level of service, I always wonder, is that the way you're thinking about it? Or are you just kind of throwing out a generic comment in the wind saying there just aren't people like that around me? And I think what you mean to say, although I don't want to put words or thoughts in your head, you just haven't found them yet. You're not sure 100% where they are. And it may just be that you know where they are, you just don't know how to get in there and interact with them. But the issue, the way you presented it, there are not people in my area who want their level of service. And the premise I'm going to say is they're there. Let's go through the logic of what it would take, assuming they actually exist, and that you haven't chosen the wrong business to get into because you live in a desert or something. But let's assume they're there, and we'll walk through the logic of, if they're there, what's the logic of people being willing to pay that level of service, assuming they can afford it? So let's assume they can afford it. What would be the logic path to making the logic to where it makes sense to pay? Then let's deal with this issue that I contend is getting ahead of yourself, but this issue of that there are no people that I can hire capable of delivering at this level of service in my area, and that is building a team later. I'm saying that's later on down the road, but we're going to deal with that as well. So what I'm going to share with you is what I call the advisor logic path. So let's deal with the advisor logic path, and let's start going through the logic. So the first issue is people in my area don't want this level of service. Now, I'm going to ask you a question, and I'm going to ask you a series of questions. What I want you to do is I want you to really candidly answer the question, and then we'll talk about it. So my first question to you is this. Based on what you've experienced and your understanding of how this business works, do you feel that spontaneous, unsolicited recommendations or referrals are rare, or are they routine, commonplace, and to be expected routinely? So what is your experience with referrals? Are they these rare birds that you can't really count on to build your business because they come along so rarely, and to find clients you have to go keep shaking the trees to find new people because there just aren't enough of these referrals from existing well-served clients to build a business on? Or is it the opposite? Are spontaneous, unsolicited referrals from well-served clients routine and commonplace and to be expected routinely? Well, I don't know how you answered that question in your head, but what if I could convince you that receiving voluntary, impulsive client referrals, you know, that's these unsolicited, spontaneous referrals from clients that you're working with. So you've got a client, and without you asking them to do it, they just spontaneously, on their own volition, refer you to someone, to a potential client, all right? So what if I could convince you that receiving voluntary, impulsive client referrals like that is common? I'm going to say even primal human behavior, and that failure, in other words, the opposite, failure to receive spontaneous, unsolicited referrals like that is actually uncommon, even abnormal. This is the rare situation. So you've got to think to yourself, what's your current situation? Are you receiving so many of these spontaneous, unsolicited referrals from clients that your calendar is filled with potential clients that you're continually sitting down with and having to figure out how to squeeze into your schedule so that you can sit down and have an initial discussion with them, and what we call it an initial client interview, to see if they're a good fit to join your ideal client community, or if you're going to point them in another direction, but not work with you. The point is, what if I could convince you that it is really the normal situation where your clients are spontaneously referring you to people on an unsolicited basis? I contend this goes back to the caveman days. It is hardwired into the human brain to give people that you care about unsolicited, spontaneous recommendations. And it's in the context of the moment that you are aware that someone you know or someone you care about has a need. So let's say you're back in the caveman days. You're a caveman, and one of your caveman friends, let's say a caveman friend of yours and their family, walk up to you, and they point down to the valley on the left, and they say, "I heard there may be food down there, so we're going to go down check it out because my family's hungry." To which, now that you're aware of what their situation is, you say, "No. Don't go down into that valley. I spent all last week down in that valley. That's the valley of death. You go down into that valley, and there are dinosaurs down there that are going to kill you. It's the valley on the right that you want to go to. I've been down there. I go down there all the time. It's the land of milk and honey. That's where the food is and the wildlife. And you go down there, and you'll gather a feast for your family." My point is, this is what they call the lizard brain. There's a part of your brain called the amygdala that it just cuts through all the crap. It basically triggers when you have an emotional visceral reaction, and when someone you know or someone you care about is in need of something, it's visceral. It's hardwired in the human brain to share helpful information with others that we know and love and care about. So I always use the example. We have somebody on our team, on my senior team, that talks about a bookkeeper that he had one time. So I'm going to use a different, little bit different metaphor than the valleys. So So this member of my team, it's Ian Hood. He talks about a bookkeeper that he had one time, and the bookkeeper was so bad. The bookkeeper was so bad, missed deadlines, made careless errors, everything that you would think common sense for a bookkeeper was lost on this particular professional. And Ian talks about how he complained to himself constantly about the gaps between the way this bookkeeper's professional behavior was versus what he expected and what he wanted, and frankly, what he would be willing to pay more for. But he had convinced himself this person was not capable because of the experience that he had had. All right, so I've had similar experiences like that, haven't you? Have you ever had an experience with anyone that is along that line where the service was not in alignment with what you needed or wanted? And I asked Ian, I said, so why didn't you change? Why didn't you go out there and get a new bookkeeper? And he said, well, he got used to where her weak points are. And he came to what I think is for clients a very comfortable resting point for a period of time. And that is, he stabilized what he thought he could count on. He's protected himself against the things, in other words, knew what to look for in the areas where this bookkeeper was weak, and just kind of rationalized with himself that, staying with this bookkeeper was easier than the effort it would take to go out and find a new one and go through all the pain and agony of interviewing a lot of bookkeepers to try to find an upgrade. And so in other words, what he was saying is, I'll keep this bookkeeper until another one comes along who looks better. And believe me, another one that comes along that looks better, this bookkeeper's fired. I'm moving on. So I asked Ian, I said, what if you found a bookkeeper? And I think we've all been in this situation, but I encouraged Ian to flip it around. I asked Ian, if you'd have made a list of all the things, all your grievances, all the little things that were not working the way you wanted, and then you add to it the things that bookkeeper was doing correctly, because when he was being very candid and honest with himself, he did say there were some things that were being done correctly on a routine basis. But the problem was that for every, 10 things that were done, there were two that were careless or had errors or something that irritated him. And so it just this bookkeeper kept poisoning the well. For every 10 things, for every 8 things they did right, there were 2 things they did wrong or carelessly. And so I said, flip it around. What if you add to all the things that bookkeeper did well and add to it the opposite of the 8 things that they did frequently wrong? And what if you came across a bookkeeper that not only did all those 8 things correctly and the 2, what if you came across a bookkeeper that did all 10 things not only correctly, but in a way that exceeded your expectations, not just met your expectations, but exceeded your expectations in every single area? What would you have done? And Ian said, I would have sung it from the rooftops. I would have told every business owner friend of mine that you're crazy if you don't use my bookkeeper, that after all the pain and agony and all the bookkeepers I've been through, I finally found one that is incredible, extraordinary, exceptional. And this is my point, that whether it's going to a movie and you see a movie that is extraordinary, or whether you have a dry cleaners who has a level of service that's just above and beyond anything you've ever experienced, it doesn't matter if it's the butcher, the baker, or the candlestick maker. Whenever we come across a service that is being delivered, or a product or a service that is far above our expectations, we can't help but share that information with the people that we know and love and care about. Now, we may just spontaneously, on an unsolicited basis, just bring it up out of the blue. But in most instances, it's in the context of an awareness of their situation. So, you know, if we went and saw the best movie we've ever seen, yeah, we might mention it to everybody that we talk to the next week. But I think we're more likely if we encounter a friend who says, hey, this weekend, you know, my spouse and I have decided we're going to kick back and relax. We're going to go see a movie. And in that context, now you're thinking, oh, I've got to tell you. If you're going to go see a movie, you've got to see this movie. Or in the context of somebody complaining, you know, looking down at their shirt and saying, you know, I am so sick of my dry cleaners. They always iron shirts wrong. Notice how the collar's got a crease in it? And they do that all the time. And they're complaining. And you just go, which I've got to tell you about my dry cleaner. There is no such problem with my, as a matter of fact, my dry cleaner is the most extraordinary dry cleaner I've ever used. And so it's visceral. It's emotional. When you're aware of something when you're aware of a need or a situation in the life of someone you know or care about, and you have a solution, a fix, then it's emotional, it's visceral, it's primal. You can't help but share and say, you know, don't, you know, you can't help yourself. You say, don't go to this valley. There's danger there. There is food in this valley since you brought up the issue of food and you're going to go down and feed your family. Okay, so that's the issue of, you know, that's my pitch. I mean, I could actually list the science for you and how the amygdala works, but this is how it works. It just cuts through all the crap. It's an emotional response to someone that you care about who is about to go down a path or has a need that you feel like you can fix or you've got a solution for. It's not rare. It's common. So the common situation is if you're delivering above your client's expectations, then the normal situation is that you're going to receive a flood of spontaneous, unsolicited referrals. That's common. That's primal. That's normal. If you're not receiving these unsolicited, spontaneous referrals, that's abnormal. There's something you're doing that is missing the client's expectations. Do I have you persuaded on this issue? Because that's the reality. And we've got data on this and we've got science, you know, brain science on our side. So what happens when a person's expectations are exceeded by an extremely wide margin? So you tell me, you know, try to think of your own experience. Have you ever experienced a product or a service that far exceeded your own expectations? Like how do you think people react? You know, if you're not buying what I'm saying, then how do you think people normally do react when they encounter something that's so far above their expectations, it literally surprises them? So what is it that you think actually does happen? And I'm gonna say that is what happens, whether it's a product or a service, whenever expectations are exceeded. And I'm not talking on a small level. I'm talking about on a large scale. When you consistently exceed expectations every single time. I think about the difference of staying in a Holiday Inn or their luxury, you know, brand, the Intercontinental hotels, you know, the difference between a Holiday Inn at any level, even the luxury end, the Intercontinental, versus the Four Seasons. I mean, I can tell you from my experience that the difference in the experience, the customer experience, is night and day between a Four Seasons and an Intercontinental hotel. From the moment you walk in the hotel and as you pull up to the hotel, as you're greeted by the first employee in the hotel at the curb, all the way into the hotel, the check-in experience, the experience with the concierge when you're trying to get help for places in the area to eat or go do activities nearby. The experience with the concierge desk, the experience in the restaurant, the experience with the housekeepers, I remember when I went to a Four Seasons hotel with my, I think it was 3-month-old baby daughter, my wife and I. When we got to the room, there was a high chair, which was way, our baby was not ready for a high chair yet, but it doesn't matter. It was really about the customer experience. They had a high chair with a cookie that was, you know, as big as a small pizza that had written on top of the cookie in, frosting, kids are welcome at the Four Seasons or some such thing. They had a balloon tied to the high chair that said, you know, kids at the Four Seasons. And then there was a bottle of, there was milk in a wine carafe sitting in a champagne bucket next to the high chair. Well, obviously this wasn't for the baby. This was for the parents. I'm thinking, I've never been in a hotel where, you know, all we did was alert them that we wanted a crib, you know? And then all of a sudden, there's all this stuff set up in the room. And then the housekeeper's knocking on the door within 10 minutes of us, you know, as we start to unpack, saying, you know, will you be needing babysitter services anytime, you know, today or tomorrow? Anyway, the experience was phenomenal. And I'm telling you, whenever I have, and I've been to Four Seasons in so many towns, Toronto, New York, Boston, Houston, all over. I try to stay in Las Vegas. I try to stay in the Four Seasons wherever I can. And my point is, whenever I have a friend or someone I care about that's going to any of the cities where I have a personal experience with the Four Seasons, what do you think happens? As far as the way I react when I find out people are going to these towns where I know they have a Four Seasons that I've been to. Well, it's visceral. It's emotional. You can't help yourself. You jump in with something useful, something helpful, something you think that will help out someone that's in a situation that that you can help them with. Okay, so my question to you is, have you ever done this for a client? Do you have any clients at this point that you've exceeded their expectations consistently? Have you far exceeded a client's expectations, any client's expectations, even a single client's expectations, to the point that they tell you that you're indispensable to them? So, in other words, from their perspective, you've gotten confirmation back that you have exceeded their expectations to the point where they are telling you that you're indispensable to them. And often this comes in the context of they're worried if something ever happens to you. Okay? So that's the logic path. Now, I'm going to go down both sides of the logic path. There was your other question that I think comes down the road because there are mindset issues and there are issues down the road which involve possible changes to your business model, and I'll go through that in a minute. But let's just go through the same logic path on your other question. So you say there are no deliverables team members capable of delivering this level of service in your area. All right. I'm trying to get to some what I call the prime directive, the actual advisor-packed logic path, but I want to go through your two questions and the logic of those before we get there. So I'm heading towards some very key fundamental logic, but I want to get through your questions and the logic of those before we get there. So, okay. Even if we're getting ahead of ourselves and we're thinking about building a team to help deliver service at this level, my question to you is, even if you have a team, what makes you think anyone other than you is responsible for ensuring an extraordinary client experience? What makes you think that even if you have a team, anybody other than you is responsible for this extraordinary client experience, which is going to exceed the client's expectations? See, in our methodology, it's up to you. It's up to you to stabilize the extraordinary client experience. It's up to you to learn and use our methods, to implement our system, to go through step by step through our methodology so that you can master the mindset issues of how to exceed a client's expectations. And we'll get to that in a minute. Like, what does exceeding a client's expectations, what does it actually mean? We'll get to that. That's the primary logic that we're heading towards. But I want to confront this, because even when you have a team, it's still up to you to deliver the extraordinary experience and make sure that the client's having this exceptional experience. All right? So think of it this way. The way the mindset part of our program works is you figure out what exceeds a client's expectations. You start delivering and ensuring that a client is actually having an extraordinary client experience. You do that. You stabilize that. And then that's now you're in control of it, because there's nobody else that is necessary to come in and make that happen. So what if you actually stepped up and took 100% responsibility for ensuring an extraordinary client experience? So in this particular advisor's case, they have a team in place, and there was a little bit of blaming the team for a couple of careless errors and some things that had happened in the past that disappointed the client. And I'm saying, what if you actually had, and so I don't want you to think too much about this, because that's a whole different logic path, how to repair trust once you've broken it. So I want you to think about it now at the beginning. What if I want you to get your mind around this, that what if you actually stepped up, took 100% responsibility for ensuring an extraordinary client experience, and then as you add team members, you're very careful. So there's some things that happen before you bring a new team member on board, and there's some things that happen after you bring a new team member on board. Keep in mind, the standard is you've already stabilized the client experience. The client is having an extraordinary client experience, but just with you. And so let's say as you add team members, before you hired them, you make sure that they are competent, that there are some things you can determine before they're hired, and there's some things that you cannot determine in advance and you have to kind of watch for after they're hired. But before they're hired, the two things you can confirm are that they are highly skilled, and that is translated as competent. They're highly competent. You can confirm that they're highly competent before you even invite them onto the team. And you can confirm that they're excited about providing an extraordinary client experience. They may not know what it is. They may not have, they may not be 100% sure on how, but it's an attitude thing. You can confirm before they come on board, their attitude is right. They're totally on the same page. They're 100% on board. And I would say that you can confirm before they come on board that they are both willing and able to step up if necessary. And so that in this particular advisor's case, that was not done. This advisor had not confirmed before he invited anyone on the team, either one, whether the competence was high enough for a client at this level, nor whether the attitude for the subject matter experts was good enough attitude in terms of their willingness to step up if necessary. But you can determine that before you hire someone. And what if you do that? What if your commitment is, I'm not going to bring anybody. I've stabilized the client experience. I know that if it's with me, this client is having an extraordinary client experience because I implemented the advisor pack method. I stabilized it. I have every handful of ideal clients, however many you've got, telling me that I'm indispensable, and I've got it stabilized. So now when I bring them on board, before they come on board, I'm going to make sure that they are competent and that they're that they've got a great attitude. And then after I bring them on board, in our process and the advisor pack methodology, what if a new team member like this, we spend the first month establishing and evaluating the one thing that we cannot assess until they're on board, and that is the quality and the quantity of the work that they do for the client. You know, we have to see their work for our client after they come on board. So what if when you have a new team member on your team, the first 4 months is simply for you to evaluate in which areas does this new professional enhance or detract from the client experience? Okay, so that's what did not happen in that advisor's situation. They did not confirm skill or attitude before coming on board. And then after they came on board, you know, we have, as a part of the advisor pack process, a way, and we talked about it last month. It was the question of the month. We talked about how to evaluate and help a subject matter expert who is highly skilled with a great attitude, how to help that individual deliver an extraordinary client experience. In other words, through the reports and the recommendations and whatever they do for the client, you know, it's got to enhance the client experience. Otherwise, you'll just, you know, continue doing it on your own. You've stabilized it on your own. So that leads to the next logic point, which is if you confirm in advance and then evaluate over the first 4 months how they will add or enhance the client experience, then the reality is it's your commitment. Team members who can demonstrate that they can improve the client experience, they get to stay. But the rest, anybody that's determined that detracts from the client experience, they've got to go, and they've got to go quickly. You know, we tried it, but it just didn't work. You know, no harm, no foul, nothing personal. You know, but I have the client experience stabilized. The client is thrilled as long as I'm involved. But I'm trying to scale. I'm adding ideal clients. I need to bring on people to help me manage the scale. The as I add ideal clients, it becomes more complex and there's more work. I have to build a team at some point, but I'm only going to build a team if they can prove that they can improve upon the client experience. In other words, I'm only adding team members that can do what I'm doing better than me, and the client notices it and is impressed by it, and it's obvious. Okay, so whether now we've got both sides, this is the logic. If you don't accept this logic, then yes, you're in the wrong business or you're in the wrong program with us, because whether your issue in your head is there aren't people in our area who want this level of service, or I can't find team members down the road that that can deliver on this level of service, the jumping off point to the primary logic, which I'm about to get to, is do you agree that if a client is thoroughly impressed with you and your team and their expectations are always exceeded, that they will instinctively think of you whenever they become aware that anybody needs sound financial advice? So when they're with a friend or when they're with an acquaintance, somebody they care about, and maybe there's a financial situation that they're faced with. Maybe they're selling their business. Maybe they've been offered a retirement package by their company. Maybe they've gotten an inheritance. Or maybe they're just complaining about their current financial professional. Maybe their tax person missed a deadline. Or maybe their financial advisor didn't do what they promised on something, and they're complaining about their advisor. But whatever. In the context of your client becoming aware of someone in their life, someone they care about, who has a financial need, and they have now become aware of it, do you agree that if you have been thoroughly impressing them, you and your team, and exceeding their expectations consistently, that the human instinct is that your name emotionally, viscerally will come to mind? And as you grow your client community, this being acknowledging and being in alignment with this reality, this human, visceral, normal behavior that if you're exceeding expectations, your clients aren't going to be able to help themselves from referring you on an unsolicited and spontaneous basis whenever they become aware that somebody needs you. That's the norm. And if you're not getting referrals filling your calendar, then that's abnormal. So that leads us to the primary logic path. So what is, let's just go through the logic and then we're done for today. I think we've covered enough. So I've kind of walked through the logic based on the two questions you asked, but let me just end up our session today with the primary logic of the whole methodology that is the Advisor Pact system. Okay. Would you agree that if you want to impress somebody, and that is impress anybody, if you want to impress somebody, anybody, that the only way to do that is to have your standards exceed theirs? So pause, think about that. What's your visceral reaction to that? And I'll give you a clue. You have to accept the five things that I'm going to present now as the primary logic for this methodology, the Advisor Pact method, or else you're in the wrong program. So some of you may say, well, wait a minute here. I kind of agree with that. I've had advisors, when I pose this question to them, say something like this. Well, I would agree that I need to meet my client's expectations. You know, if a client looks at what I'm doing for them, I recognize that the human reaction to anything is to compare, you know, after they've experienced you for a little while, that it's normal for a client to think, you know, every time they interact with you, you know, they're thinking, is this relationship, you know, above, at, or below my expectations? It's kind of a normal, natural human grading system. But I have some advisors who think all I really need to do is meet their expectations. Why do I have to exceed their expectations? And I would say it depends on what you want, okay? We have data on this. We actually have quite a bit of data on this. If you set it as your goal to meet your client's expectations and not exceed them, but to meet them, then that is a business strategy to not get fired. I think we can agree that if you set your standard with your team, or even if it's just you delivering the experience at first, if you set your standards to meet a client's expectations, what you're really saying is, I'm going to do what I have to do to avoid getting fired. And I'll go along with that. But if you want to actually receive referrals or be recommended by this client, and be recommended in an unsolicited, spontaneous manner. In other words, when you're not around asking them for referrals, when they're in a situation with someone, you know, maybe they're at dinner with friends, or maybe they're at a backyard barbecue, or sitting next to someone in a charitable board meeting, or maybe they're sitting next to another parent in a parent-teacher PTA meeting. Whatever the case, if they're interacting with someone and that person has a financial need, if your goal is for your client to spontaneously think of you and recommend that person in very strong terms contact you, which I've had clients tell me that, you know, hey, I told my brother-in-law they're an idiot if they don't call you, Mark. Well, that's a strong referral. You know, if your goal is to actually receive referrals, then you've got to exceed their standards, because meeting their standards does not rise to the level of an emotional, visceral reaction that whenever they hear of someone's need in the financial area, they're in their mind, they picture you instantly because of all the bank account of experiences that they've had with you where you exceeded their expectations consistently. Okay, so would you agree that if you want to impress somebody, anybody, that the only way to do that is to have your standards exceed theirs? And would you agree that the only way a client ever knows which standards you actually live up to is from the client experience that they experience from you. In other words, that's just another way of saying the only real way that a client has, I mean, you can say all day that your standards are higher than other advisors. You could even put on a sales pitch before a client comes on board, and you could promise all these things that you do that puts you head and shoulders above other financial advisors. But that's all talk. I think what you have to agree is that the only way a client ever actually knows the standards that you really live up to, in other words, what's true about the experience of working with you, is from the client experience that they have with you. Okay, so would you agree that the only way that a client ever knows which standards you actually live up to is from the client experience that they experience from you, that you deliver? All right, so that's an undeniable truth of the advisor pact logic. And you have to say yes to each of these five statements. So assuming you acknowledge the first one, by the way, we call the prime directive, just like in Star Trek. That issue of, would you agree that if you want to impress someone, the only way to do that is to have your standards exceed theirs. Many things that we deal with always comes back to that. Your standards have to exceed the client's standards if you expect referrals. But assuming you accept that, and you accept that they only can measure or gauge what's true about you from their experience with you, then would you then agree that it's the client who's the one that's setting the standards for the client experience that you need to live up to? So we're setting up almost like a paradox here. It could seem confusing because, you know, it's your standards have to exceed theirs, and the only way they actually gauge you is from the experience that you deliver. However, what they're comparing the experience against is in their head. It's their standards, not yours. So how do you do this in a way that your standards exceed theirs, but you don't know in advance what their standards are? That's what our entire program is all about. It's this black box of what you don't know. It's how do you exceed standards when you're not 100% sure what they are? And that's our program. We've done the data. We've talked to, you know, so many multimillionaires over the years, not just the building of my firm, but you know, the hundreds of advisors that we've worked with since 2002, and the data that we've got on, you know, we know what multimillionaires want from these relationships. And so ultimately, you will know the answer to this. You know, what is it that they expect? But until then, the reason you're in this program is you're going to borrow from us what we have learned about what clients expect and the standards that they have. And everything that we tell you to do in our system is backed by the notion that, you know, we're trying to improve the client experience in a way that just exceeds their expectations, so that you have this consistency in the client's mind that they always exceed my expectations, just like the Four Seasons. Okay, what's that little bit extra that you can do? And it's usually not much. But it's enough to exceed their expectations in a way that surprises them. So you have to agree that it's the client who's setting the standards, not you, not your team. It's if your team is saying, yeah, but we're not going to, why do we have to work any harder for this client? They're getting what they're paying for. Or, you know, or maybe you even have a team member that says, I'm not doing any more for that client. I'm not getting paid to do more. So it's not about your standards. It's not about your team's standards. It's not about any of that. The only thing it's about is your client's standards. Your client is the one who's setting the standards for the client experience that you have to live up to. And would you agree that the more successful and affluent the client, the higher their standards are for the client experience? In other words, the greater your challenge is. So we talked earlier about, you know, client, you know, the at the low end of the of our other, you know, if you advance through this process, you'll get to a point where it's just might you might consider it easier just to join the Trusted Advisor Toolkit so you don't have to reinvent the wheel. Well, that's down the road, but at least on those advisors, we do have data, and that's where I went through it earlier, that on the low end of the Trusted Advisor Toolkit advisors that we work with, you know, they're charging their clients $20,000 per client per year. On the high end, it's $100,000 compensation to the advisor per client per year. And the median is $25,000, or the average is $25,000. So I think, you know, the question of whether you choose a higher compensation or a lower compensation, because keep in mind, all these clients are getting the same, in essence, the same deliverables. It's just, you know, what brand of champagne do you want to, this is theoretical, we don't recommend that you serve champagne to your clients. But the issue is, you know, is it first class or coach? Are you going to just basically deliver our methodology at a base level? Let's call that $20,000 per client per year. So how do you make a decision whether to charge more? Let's say $25,000 or $35,000 per client per year. It's just an awareness that the higher you go, the higher the expectations of the client. And so you've got to start, and our whole system is designed around that. It's fine. You want to start charging $100,000 per client per year? Fine, our system will support that. Our system is supporting that with actual advisors. The question is, are you willing to set the standard for your team? In other words, are you, since the only way that those clients are ever going to know what's true about the service that you deliver, it's from the client experience that you deliver, are you willing to actually firmly embed standards for you and your team to deliver a, let's call it $25,000, $100,000 client experience on an annual basis. But it's purely a confidence issue. It's your confidence. The issue of compensation is nothing more than your level of confidence at your willingness to hold yourself to a higher standard, because it can be done. It is being done. And then finally, the last piece of the logic path is the question, would you acknowledge that the client experience that you have provided is currently determining the number of referrals your current clients are providing to you or not providing to you? In other words, this advisor saying, you know, there aren't people around here who want this level of service, when the reality is they're there. We're only looking for 50. It's, you know, can you acknowledge that it's your client experience that's making you say that you have not gotten your client experience, you haven't followed step by step through our methodology closely enough to basically be receiving spontaneous unsolicited referrals at the pace that would make you believe that there are lots of people in your area that actually want service at this level. So I'm just pointing out that whether you are or you are not receiving referrals, it's, can you acknowledge that it's the experience that you're providing that is the solution? That if you are receiving lots of referrals, it's always because you're delivering an extraordinary client experience consistently. And that if you are not receiving a flood of referrals consistently, it's because the client experience that you're delivering is not exceeding your current client's expectations, at least not consistently enough to make them think of you and make sure that people that they know who need financial services, you know, it's not your name that's coming to mind. And that's because your client experience needs work. But that's the whole point. Our system is designed 100% around improving the client experience. So that's where we'll leave it. It's all about following the process, implementing our program so that you can deliver an extraordinary client experience. And I walked through the logic based on the two issues that you're trying to get your mind around. And hopefully this helps. And that's it for this edition of the Advisor Pact Monthly Session. I'm Mark Little. And until next month, we wish you all the best in implementing.